Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are returning to the topic of the mother and baby home reports. And in this case, it's a very serious situation where people are unhappy with the state have framed it, or maybe I'm wrong, but it's been framed as the biggest payout and the biggest thing of its kind in the history of the state. And Martin, I put it to you that these things should all, that's totally inappropriate way of it being framed. I mean, we see this every year with the budget. This is the largest housing budget in the history of the state. Well, I should hope so. The state is bigger than it was, and we see all of this nonsense. But I just feel, reading the people who are informed and know about it, that it's very, very difficult to get by the fact that we've simplified and dumbed down how we report these things.
Yeah, this is not a windfall. This is not something a jackpot win for people. This is not what this is. This is about paying people for the destruction you caused in their lives. It's what they're owed, and to describe it any other way is just doing a disservice to the women. It just really is.
We are thrilled to be joined by two fabulous guests. People are rejoining the podcast again. We have Mairead Enright, who listeners will know, legal academic and basically a force of nature when it comes to feminism and these issues. And Conal O'Farrada, who is now a lecturer in journalism at NUI, but formerly wrote extensively and in great detail about these events for the Irish Examiner. Mairead and Conal, thank you for joining us.
No problem.
I'm going to start with a quote, because I think it's interesting if you think of it in this context for listeners. This is from a minister at the time. He said, "It also marks the culmination of a process I initiated together with the Minister of State. It reflects my promise to the women who resided and worked in the laundries to see justice done." That minister was Alan Shatter, and that was 2013 in the Quirk report. I think it's important that we remember that, because before we start this conversation, folks, that the reality of the situation is what happened yesterday, Mairead, I don't feel has evolved much further on from 2013 in terms of the report. And in fact, some of the aspects of it show that the actual survivors, the people who've come through and all, they weren't really listened to.
I think that's a really useful quote to begin with, because it reminds us that the Magdalen redress scheme of 2013 is basically the government's template. Whenever anything that it wants to categorize as historical or institutional comes up, this is its go-to approach. And certainly it's clear that what's being proposed for people who are in mother and baby homes is very closely related to the Magdalen scheme. Any payments that are made are going to be on the basis of two criteria: time, which will apply both to people who were mothers and pregnant or people who were children when they were in the homes, and in respect of women, and work, commercial work. So those will be the two things that you can get compensation for effectively. It was largely the same with the Magdalen laundries. That scheme was roundly criticised, but it's also just not an appropriate template for what we're talking about here. It's bad enough that so much of what happened to women in the Magdalen laundries in terms of physical and emotional abuse, degradation and so on, was simply not compensated. But the nature of the injury in terms of family separation, you know, often non-consensual, often illegal, fraudulent, maybe with commercial dimensions, in addition to trauma, physical injury, forced vaccination, all the things that we were talking about when the commission report came out, they're not the same thing. You know, these are not carbon cut out problems, and it is inappropriate to simply transplant one kind of redress scheme onto a different situation. But of course, that's what the commission recommended. The commission said, well, look to the Magdalen scheme as a template, and so that's what the government has done. But to get to your second question about, have survivors been listened to? Like, that's kind of the rub, right? I think if I was somebody, I mean, we sent in a submission to Oak, but I wasn't participating as an individual, obviously. I think if I was looking at what the minister said yesterday, having participated in that process, I would ask why Oak was asked to write anything at all. Because the minister has made some minor adjustments to what the commission proposed, but what survivors and participants in the Oak consultation were asking for was much more radical. And we can talk about all of that in great detail, but the first thing I would flag was that from what Oak published, there was not unanimous but very strong agreement between people who had been in the institutions who participated in the Oak consultation, that what they wanted was a universal, inclusive, comprehensive scheme. And what that means is that, to the greatest extent possible, people with a connection to these institutions have an entitlement to financial and other reparations. And that's just not what's happened in this proposal. And in particular, the time limit that's been set for people who were babies and children in the institutions, and the outright refusal, as far as I can see, with one tiny exception around inheritance tax, to offer financial reparation to people who were boarded out. Like, that exclusion of people who were classed as, and are still in some ways classed as, children is reprehensible.
I know you've worked on this topic for a number of years, and you know, and more power to you, it's really appreciated. But you were quite disgusted yesterday, and I recall the first time I heard the phrase, so I'm going to credit Nolene Brown with it. She said, "Delay, deny, and wait for me to die." We're back in a way with a scenario whereby the listener, the people who've gone through the system haven't been acknowledged, listened to. And as Mairead puts it, the amounts are derisory. They are capped at certain levels, and it's like an abacus is put on a wall, and we can somehow have an actuary do this. Do you want to give me, first of all, your overall impression, and then some of your main kind of things that stand out for you?
Just going to interrupt your podcast here for a minute. Over the last week, we've done over 10 podcasts. We've spoken to people from all around the world. We've tackled subjects that you won't hear tackled in the mainstream media. This is what we do, and we try and make it available to everybody. For that, we need some patrons along so that we can make this available to everybody. So that's what we're looking for, patrons. You have to sign up to be a patron. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. For the price of a cup of coffee, you get a huge volume of podcasts covering a vast amount of subjects, and it's great value. It is absolutely great value. Tony, you think it's great value?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, I'm going to say I do, but I think what's more important is people get benefits from it. We're able to have those conversations that help get the voices out there, get a little bit more change, and push for the change that we all think is necessary in this country. And indeed, talk about voices that happen beyond our borders, because that's something that's really matters now. We don't get that. We don't get the perspectives. No one gave the perspectives that we gave when it came to the corporation tax. I'm literally this week working with the Fight Inequality Global Protest on Tax the Rich. I'm working in the background with it, and we can't do that work. When you put your hand in your pocket, that means I have the actual hours of my day that I can give to those projects, because without your support, I can't do it. I have to do something else. I have to go do something that actually will pay my bills. So the reality is, you doing that means we can actually try and push for the change. I do want to mark, and I know it's probably inappropriate, but we saw ICHH closing this week. Those services are still needed. Those supports are still needed. And we will continue to advocate for what happens with homelessness in Ireland. And to be able to do that, it actually, unfortunately, there has to be a monetary value to these podcasts. These podcasts have to continue to operate and talk to people, tell personal stories of homelessness like we've lined up for this week, like we shared last week with David's story. We have to be able to do those. But it doesn't happen without a few of you. Not everybody, because some of you haven't got it. But it's a fiver a month. If you have a fiver a month and you were spending a fiver a month on something flippant like a magazine,
a coffee,
give it to us if you can. Yeah. Patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We'll let you go back to the podcast. Thanks for the support. Do you want to give me, first of all, your overall impression, and then some of your main kind of things that stand out for you?
Well, I pretty much echo everything Mairead said. You know, listening to the political commentary on it, you know, it's the usual type of language that you get, which is, you know, we're trying to be kind to survivors, we believe them, this was done with them in mind. And yet the redress scheme completely contradicts that. And as I said something on Twitter, and I think we talk a lot about state apologies. Ultimately, state apologies, as we've learned through the Magdalene Laundry apology, are utterly meaningless. The state essentially has continued to walk it back since the day it was made. Ultimately, the only way to measure justice and how we give it to people is to how we grant redress. And it's clear from the Magdalen Laundry scheme exactly what the state thinks of survivors. Not very much, number one, and number two, it doesn't believe them. And I think it's pretty clear from this redress scheme that anything that a minister says about believing survivors is entirely bogus, because quite clearly they don't. As Mairead said, the entire point of the Oak report was, after the furore over the commission's report itself, was to say, well, redress is coming, and when we do redress, we will go beyond the commission's findings and we will listen to what you have to say. So we will create this process.
I need to push in on that for a second, because what they did, if I'm right, and both of you, please correct me if I'm wrong, they turned around to people and they said, give us your, you know, do an affidavit, give us your testimony, give us that. And then they would say, but then we'll choose to actually ignore that ultimately at the end and say, this is your version of events, but these are the official version of events, and we didn't weight them in the same way. Am I right in that sort of layman's understanding?
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a willful ignorance of what mother and baby homes were and what they did. And the entire raison d'etre for them was to ensure the forced and often illegal separation of families. None of that is being redressed in this scheme. The entire redress scheme is based on how long you were in the institution, which is certainly part of the issue. But I mean, it is not the fundamental abuse that was suffered here was the separation of families. That is what the survivors told the Oak report. It was the number one criteria chosen by more than 2/3 of the people that they spoke to as the first and foremost, the primary criteria for eligibility to the scheme. That's been entirely ignored. And I mean, it's very clear that the government doesn't want to highlight this report. I mean, it's buried at the very bottom of the press release. It's not mentioned at all. So as Mairead said, what was the point of it in the first place when the intention was to completely ignore it? And to go back to the Magdalen Laundry scheme, it is beyond me how they can attempt to mimic this and do it with a straight face. I mean, this was a report which campaigners and survivors fought that redress scheme for years, until eventually the ombudsman was left with literally no option other than to investigate the scheme. The scheme was found to have been maladministered. The ombudsman made a number of recommendations, one of which was accepted by the government, which was, and I quote from it, "While not directed at the department, the ombudsman recommends that guidance be produced centrally on the development and operation of future restorative justice or redress schemes." So essentially the ombudsman said, you can't do this again. This is not the way to do redress. And the very next scheme, they have done it. I mean, it is beyond comprehension that they can do this. But,
And the amounts of money involved are really derisory. I mean, that has to be said. There is headline figures of up to, I think it's 125,000. But for the vast majority of people, you're talking very low sums for such traumatic experiences.
I think, like, just to kind of hammer some of that home, right, and to draw the contrast between kind of what was asked for and what's going to be received. So there are time criteria both for women and girls who were pregnant or mothers in the institutions and babies, people who were babies in the institutions. Up until 6 months, nothing that happens to you if you were a baby in one of those institutions attracts a payment. And I heard the minister apologise for saying this on Morning Ireland, but I think he still said it, and it was one of the things that was said in the commission report, so it's worth saying again. There's an assumption that babies that tiny are not affected by what happens to them in the earliest period of their life, and that's just not borne out by any scientific knowledge.
No, that's just not true.
And anybody who has had reason to engage in therapeutic parenting with their own child to deal with any kind of adverse early life experience will know how that sort of thing can stick with people and have lifelong consequences. But in relation, so some people will get €0. Women who were in the institutions, I think up to 3 months, will get up to €5,000. Now, the minister keeps calling that, and his people keep calling that, a common experience payment. But that's not what's ordinarily intended by a common experience payment. A common experience payment is supposed to be a baseline that can then be supplemented if you have other aggravated experiences. So you would get something based on time, potentially, and time is often chosen as a criteria in redress schemes because supposedly it's easier to prove than other kinds of more specific harm, which might require, let's say, medical evidence or a sworn statement or, you know, witnesses, you know, depending on the design of the scheme. I'm not saying any of those things would be required necessarily in this instance in every case. But there's meant to be like a relatively accessible baseline. And what many of us who made submissions to Oak asked for, and this is going to happen in Northern Ireland in equivalent circumstances, because in Northern Ireland they've adopted the Truth Recovery Panel's recommendations effectively wholesale, is that if you can demonstrate you were in one of those institutions, you can get an interim payment now before any more complex assessment process starts. And that means the people who are older, who are terminally ill, who are in health, who are in deep need, that they can receive a payment. As to whether 5,000 is derisory, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say 5,000 is nothing.
I need to come in on that because the simple fact, if you're an actuary and if you're running an insurance business and you want to calculate a minimum charge, I think the baseline on life is about 17,000 to 19,000 pounds sterling. Okay, so we're talking about a baseline. You're talking about a baseline of a quarter of that. So if you put that in context, I'm sorry to put my economics hat on, but that is derisory. No, you know?
I mean, I'm not. I don't think it's helpful to like talk about equivalences, especially when you're talking about breaches of fundamental human rights. And you know, in some ways, focusing on money without also saying repeatedly, look, it's not just about money, it's also about records, it's about burials, about so many other things. I think, though, you know, 5,000 isn't going to pay for very much, is it? And in the kind of scheme that many of us had in mind, 5,000 would have been a supplementary payment for something. So, for example, some submissions recommended that if you had been adopted abroad, that you should be entitled to a supplementary grant to facilitate a trip home, potentially to pursue reunification. In the north, grants will ideally be made available for voluntary DNA testing. Like, that kind of small amount might be appropriate for a supplement. Nobody is saying that there's an amount of money that can compensate anybody for what happened to them in those institutions. But a basic legal principle is that it should, at least the amount you get should be proportionate in some way to what happened to you. And 5,000 is not going to be proportionate for anybody. But also bear in mind this waiver, which is a trick that they've kept from the Magdalen scheme and every, as far as I can remember, most schemes since. If you want that 5,000, you will have to waive your right to sue the state or any other public or statutory body in relation to any other claims. So let's say that I was in one of those institutions and I was subject to non-consensual medical treatment. Let's say I take my 5,000, I have to sign my waiver. I'm not entitled to bring a separate claim in relation to the medical treatment as far as I can see. So I'm supposed to sign away what are constitutional rights for a pittance. And just one final thing, you know, the minister said this morning, and this is just pure spin because this is not actually what people say in the Oak report. People say they don't want to go through re-traumatizing, deeply adversarial hearings as the only route to financial redress. They did not say, listen, if I was sexually abused, I want the state to come in and protect me from myself by locking away the possibility of any compensation or justice for that harm. That's not what they said. But the Minister of Morning Ireland this morning said, we've gone with time as the only major criterion, route to redress, because it's easy to prove and it's not adversarial. Look at what happened with the Magdalen schemes.
Yeah.
Even where women were only, in inverted commas, asking to prove period spent, we know from the Ombudsman report that Connell mentioned, people still don't have access to their institutional records. There's no real clarity in what the minister announced yesterday in terms of people's access to the evidence that is available to the state about what happened to them. When will they get their records? When will they get their paperwork? Even on paper-only based schemes with broad brush criteria like time spent, for example, people have experienced those things as adversarial. It's not, the question isn't the type of evidence involved. The question isn't the type of harm. It's how the state treats people. So it's just complete nonsense. And the final thing, I think you said earlier about believing people, right? And, you know, with the main report, They didn't treat people's evidence appropriately. They didn't take it into account. But, you know, the Oak consultation was supposed to be a consultation. It wasn't about what people could prove or what people could demonstrate. It was about what people wanted and what they thought was fair and just. So actually, it's not, when I first read it, I thought, oh, look, this is just repeating the original harm we had over the last year, ignoring people's evidence. This is actually a different kind of harm. It's not just we don't believe you. We also don't care what you think. We just put you through this process and we're going to ignore it.
Yeah, we brought in a process because the theatrics of to be seen to do something was actually visually good. And then again, and this is why I'm going to you, Conal, on this, and you can be annoyed at me if you want, but then when you turn around, then you have to sit there and hear, as Mairead said, you know, the minister going on the national airwaves, you see the reporting across the ways, and every bulletin covered it on the basis of the largest redress in the history of the state. You know, everybody, aren't we wonderful? And there was this element, I put it to you, that the disapproval of the people who suffered from this deserved a lot more than simply the state feeding it out and the media becoming a press office for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the coverage was, you know, frustrating to say the least. Again, to go on a line that it's the largest redress scheme in the history of the state and it's going to cost 800 million. I mean, that line in isolation is utterly meaningless. I mean, what does that mean? It's when you drill down into the figures and who's actually accessing the scheme and for the paltry amount that they're accessing it from, it doesn't actually mean anything. The detail of the scheme is what matters. And it's the same if you report anything. The detail is what matters, not the headline figure. And I'm sure that's a very deliberate strategy on the department's view, is to say, well, look at how much money we're spending on it. And I mean, I've highlighted numerous times a letter I did receive from somebody within the department where they said the attitude within the department was, sure, they're all after redress anyway. So the line is, well, sure, here's 800 million and, you know, have at it. And just to go back to something Mairead said, I mean, again, the language around this is always really, really striking. I mean, the minister said no matter what amount of money you look at, the fundamental abuse is not being addressed here, which is the separation of mothers and children. And nowhere in the redress scheme is that mentioned. And I mean, it's a very simple question for the minister. Why? When it's the obvious, I mean, you can watch any documentary, any film, read any book, read any newspaper article in the last decade about mother and baby homes. That is what they were for. That is what they did. So why are we ignoring that now? Why is that now become, now it's all about how long you were in an institution. So he said he's conscious of the trauma suffered through forced separation. And I noted that because just how conscious are they? I highlighted the case of Jackie Foley. I wrote her story. She was in Bessborough for 5 days. She was 16 in 1974. When she went in there, she was instructed in the presence of named nuns, this is all documented, a solicitor and her mother, to sign a false name on a consent form. All of the documentation that followed that was falsified, including her son's baptismal cert, her son's birth certificate. The adoption order, which is the state's legal imprimatur for this adoption, is made out in entirely bogus documentation. Her son has never been informed that this happened to him. He has no idea. Now, the state is aware of her case since 2005. In 2019, we FOI'd Thusla. Thusla were saying, don't refer to this as an illegal adoption because this stuff is FOIable and people like her might take a case. That is what the state thinks of these people. And what is she entitled to under this scheme for the trauma she suffered, which is ongoing, by the way? €5,000. What is her son entitled to? Nothing. And worse than that, he doesn't even know what happened to him. So that's how conscious the state is of the trauma that these women suffered.
Oh, no, they're conscious of it, Conal. I put it to you, they're both of you then. And Martin, I know you want to come in, but I put it to you, they're very conscious of it. But this is way of framing something, which is effectively still a damage limitation exercise.
Yeah, and I think you're right to put it in context, Conal. And I think it's worth saying that, you know, if you put it in a different context, 800 million is about what revenue wrote off for one company last month in tax. So when you put it in
1.3 billion, Martin, they wrote off.
So when you put it in context like that, it's not it's not the massive amount of money. I can simply hand it back to a multi to contribute to this, because that's a very strange setup. There is no compulsion there. It is simply you are expected to give something.
And the goal here is to divide the survivor population into neat boxes that can be ticked. So the vast majority of people who were in mother and baby homes did not remain there for 10 years. Some did. So the higher payments will go to those people, but they're, again, the largest amount of payouts will go to the smallest number of people. That's the goal here. The goal is it is an accounting exercise. And it doesn't redress the principal human rights abuse, which is the key flaw.
Murray, you've referenced several times the Oak Tree report, you've referenced that the survivors, and I know we've spoken to them, they were very unhappy with the report. I've referenced the beginning of this, the 2013 Quirk report, and how this has been carried on. Is there anything that has been done that A has brought the process forward, and is there anything more that we should have just done as a state, as a citizenry? We should be really, Conal, you asked the question on Twitter, if you're not angry, you should be, right? That's how you framed it. Right. People don't seem to be angry because they're reading the headline, the largest redress scheme in the history of the state. And it just seems to bother me a lot.
I think people will get angry. I hope people will get angry. My impression yesterday, although when it was actually released, and like when the press conference and stuff was going on, I was actually in a meeting with somebody who had been in another kind of institution, and I'm sure she won't mind me saying, without identifying her, when we kind of sat down, she had just seen the headlines and she said, they've learned nothing, have they? You know, and I think a lot of people, like, she wasn't affected by this particular scheme, but I think a lot of people who have been affected by this particular scheme will have been a bit stunned at how blunt the just the sidelining of what was said in the consultation is. And I think people will be taking some time to process that. I think it's also important to remember that a lot of people who are key spokespersons on this issue are involved in cases in the High Court today and for the next while. I wouldn't like to speculate on what that has to do with the timing of this press release, but I think those of us who, I mean, I'm very much on the fringes of this, but I'm sure Conal will agree, because we often say it, these things come in twos and threes for a reason, and they come in, you know, I think if I had been somebody who had participated as an individual in the Oak process and I was listening in yesterday, I might feel just a bit, I mean, I'm not going to put words in anybody's mouth, like, but a bit stuck, right? Because it's, your time has been wasted. Your energy, your creativity, your good ideas, your good faith has just been sucked up into this report, put there for the archive and ignored. And that is just a theme in how this government treats people, in how they treat people who are dealing with, not only with significant personal issues of all kinds, but many of whom have taken on themselves voluntarily the role of advocating for others. So I think, like, I'm not going to say, oh, people aren't angry. I think people are exhausted and a bit stunned. And I think that dam will burst in due course. But again, like, it just kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier, you know, the all this talk of trauma and the non-adversarial just doesn't map on to what feels like a very strategic set of decisions to wear people down and exhaust them. As to what it should have looked like, I mean, I heard the minister today say, oh, well, you know, the commission said we shouldn't pay anybody who was there after 1974, but we heroically decided to pay people who were there after 1974. Great, $5,000, like, fantastic, like, pat on the back. Or 10 or 15, you know, quite a small amount of money. So that was easily done, really, wasn't it? But it's important to remember, legislation will be required to get this scheme going. That's why it's going to take until apparently the end of 2022 before anybody gets paid. And it would be very easy, and we have the Truth Recovery Panel in Northern Ireland, you know, its recommendations as a model even for some changes that it would be very easy for the Oireachtas to make. You can get rid of that waiver, which is being challenged by Elizabeth Coppin, on the international stage, in which, you know, the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission have said in their advisory report to government, as the scheme was being designed, said, you know, that the waiver is such a problematic provision. The government could decide to make interim payments. There's very little detail in what the minister has said on what the application procedure will actually look like, but there are some good recommendations and asks in the Oak report itself. I think it's up to the Oireachtas now, right? Maybe there's been a bit of a lull because everyone is just kind of stunned and disgusted. But what the minister said yesterday is not the end of it, and it would not be tough legislative work to go back to the Oak report and actually draft up what people have asked for. And the last thing I'd say is, just for anyone who's been following the work of the CLAD project and Claire and Maeve and all of those people, they, as always, put out some fantastic materials for, you know, people who wanted to have their say with Oak, all kinds of forms and public legal education materials. And you can see how that empowered people. You can see that people took those ideas on board and made them their own and fed them into the consultation. And so I think you have a degree of support for that legal model already reflected in the Oak report. And so I hope that supportive TDs and senators will be going back, reading that, looking at some of the drafts of legislation that are already out there, and just kind of fix this. You know, I hope that the minister and his department are thoroughly ashamed of themselves. I think the big risk is that, as we've seen with cervical check, people just will not participate in the scheme and will decide to take their chances with the courts instead. And, you know, that's going to be, if money is what they're concerned about and adversarialism is what they're concerned about, you know, that will be much more expensive and in many ways much tougher in the long run, you know.
Oh, no, you're not away there. So,
yeah, like, one of my first thoughts was, why would you sign a waiver for €5,000 after everything you'd been through? I mean, the government, you know, you were put through, you know, a process that ignored you once through the commission, and they've done it again. So why would you enter any other process with them, particularly when it's not actually financially worth your while, particularly given the trauma that you suffered? And I think the other thing that perhaps the government has underestimated is the level of public anger around this. I mean, primarily, I think the way a lot of government optics work are we put something out there, we see what way it flies in the public in terms of the media coverage and how long it lasts, whether positive or negative. And if we can ride that initial storm, it'll be fine. And I mean, that's essentially what happened with the Magdalen Laundry Redress Scheme. The level of public anger around that scheme was nil. You know, there was no media coverage of it. We had the apology and the big hoo-ha in the media, and then redress schemes happen silently and in private, and nobody really sees them. And until people start digging into them, like JFM did, and, you know, I started to write about it in the media, that took an enormous length of time to get to where the Ombudsman investigation happened. This is different. I think the level of public anger around the report initially stunned the government. And I think that level of public anger will continue with this. And I think they have underestimated that, and that will continue. And now that there's a legislative process that's going to happen, that level of public anger will only increase. And I think if people refuse to access the scheme, that will be very problematic for the government. So I don't think we're at the end of this by a long shot, really.
I'm gonna bring this to close. I wonder, Mairead, if you have any final comments.
Sorry, I was just finally charging my my phone, which is bringing me to your audience from sunny Maynooth before it goes again. I don't actually have any other comments except to say, this morning when I was listening to the radio, this morning on RTE, There were short clips, interviews with three people who were affected. A gentleman, an older gentleman from Kerry, whose name I didn't catch, and Deirdre Wadding and Conrad Brian. And just their calm and their dignity and their just sort of steadfastness and their willingness to put themselves publicly on the line at all, I thought was more than we deserve. And I mean, more than this, whatever the official version of us deserves anyway. And, you know, Colm O'Gorman says this often, you know, a lot of those advocates have processed some very dark stuff themselves, have assisted others to do the same. They have tremendous knowledge, tremendous wisdom. And it is such a waste of potential to treat them like this and refuse to listen to what they have, to what they've learned. You know, so this government and its predecessors have been very keen to make big set piece public apologies about how Ireland is moving on. And what this shows, like this constant rut we're stuck in of the same broken redress scheme, the same version of the same commission over and over again, the same mistakes, we're not moving on from anything. We're just stuck in this kind of traumatic repetition. We should listen to the people who know how to work through that. And the fact that we won't is just, I mean, I'm not going to despair or anything, but we were saying before we started this conversation, who's angry and who isn't. I didn't feel quite so angry this time because it's just so obviously wrong, and I kind of wasn't even surprised. And I think that kind of mutedness might just be maybe something quite hopeful, like that they've, I don't know, the government has so obviously produced a kind of dead duck redress scheme, and they've screwed this issue up so many times. They've had to walk back their appalling proposals so many times. And I'm really hoping that, you know, in hopefully less than 6 months' time, but that in a few months' time, we're looking at some decent legislation for a good redress scheme at last. I have some faith that's going to happen.
Mairead and Conal, thank you for coming on and have this conversation with us. We do certainly hope that at some stage, the government will learn not to re-traumatise people at every single stage of a redress process. Thank you again for taking the time and having this conversation with us. It's been very informative. Thank you.
Just a last comment, if I could go back to the 2013 report before I started there, I'll finish there. There is a quote, and it was, "The public at large, its level of disapproval in the light of the gravity of the state's misconduct." So that's the challenge if you're listening to this. You guys are listening. I want you to be outraged on behalf of the people that have been mistreated and again mistreated and abused further on. This is more important than just simply, sending a tweet. Let your TD know. Let them know we successfully did away with the reports that we've done. We need to do something similar again. I'm reading that quote from 2013. I could have been reading it from bloody 63 for all we know. We need to change this. And again, I echo what Martin said. It's been a privilege as usual to talk to Mairead and Conal. We really appreciate the work you guys do and continue to do. Talk to you all very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.